Gamertag Radio presents E3 coverage. Hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo are direct from the convention center floor.
Right, so I'll start talking. Welcome, everyone.
Yes.
We're excited to have you here and show you Generation Zero for the first time. Yep. Well, that is just setting up. My name is Emil Krafting. I'm the game director for the game. We have Dan over here and Sasha over there. They're going to play the game for you on Xbox One X. Generation Zero is a open world action game where you, on your own or together with up to three friends, wage a guerrilla war against a mysterious invading force in 80s Sweden. What we're going to show you today is a pre-alpha build, so we're in mid-production. It's going to have some placeholder stuff, etc. Just fair warning. In the game, you play as a young adult. You've been out in the archipelago together with your friends on an excursion, and you've been cut off from the world. This is in the time before cell phones. As you return, you are attacked from shore. Your boats are sunk, you scramble to shore, injured but alive, and you realize that something has gone terribly wrong. Houses are unlocked, abandoned, there's no people around, cars stand along the road, and the only thing around are these strange machines that are seemingly out to kill you. So while trying to find out what's been going on, what's happening, you have to stay alive as well. This is a self-published title from us. We're working together with Microsoft on the idea at Xbox program. But it's being built by a small team, very passionate, with a lot of creative freedom. Let's go into the game. So I can say welcome to Sweden, November 14th, 1989. Generation Zero is built using our proprietary Apex engine. It lets us create these vast, open, beautiful worlds. And everything you see here is part of the world, and you can go there. Even across the body of water, that's part of the world. For now, though, we're heading towards a nearby village called Salthamn. This plays out early in the game, so we're still trying to find out where everyone went. And the first few clues that we've found has led us to believe that people were evacuated to Salthamn because there's a bomb shelter. So we want to see what's going on. Now, the world of Generation Zero is very beautiful, but it's also very dangerous, so you will be on a constant lookout for weapons and equipment that can help you survive. You'll also be on a constant lookout for enemies as they roam the world persistently and dynamically. Now, up ahead on this road, we have a couple of crashed cars, which is a perfect source for leads, but they also seem to have attracted one of our enemy types that we call the Runner. This is a fairly low-level enemy, and it's a single one, so even though our starting weapons is not that good, this should be an easy fight for us. When you destroy an enemy, you can scavenge its remains. This is the main source of ammunition in the game. And some of the more advanced enemies will have some more advanced stuff for you to scavenge as well. Otherwise, you will be mostly on the lookout for weapons and equipment. But you can also find outfits and apparel. This is in part to make you be able to create your perfect 80s character. Brag about it, but some items and apparel also have attribute impact. So, for instance, we found a pair of sneakers here that increases your movement speed and gives you a boost to your jumping capabilities. You'll want to find those best outfits. In this trunk here, we found a hunting rifle, which is a great complement to the single pistol we had before. There's a lot of different weapons in the game, and all of them come in different quality levels. So the one rifle we picked up now, it was kind of rusty, it's a worn one, and it has poor spread, accuracy, not that high damage. But you can find better quality versions of each weapon. They look more shiny, but they also have better stats. through the world looking for opportunities, you will find that some locations are of more interest to you than others. So the regular cars we just looted had weapons, but mostly they don't. On this bridge up ahead, though, we see a police car, and that's something that we can assume will have better opportunities at too. Being a police car, it might have weapons, it might have ammunition. Indeed, in the trunk we found some ammunition. We found a rifle scope and a med kit. Now the rifle scope is a weapon attachment. There are several types of attachments, and you can switch them on and off of your weapons when the situation calls for it. They also come in different quality levels, so here as well you want to find the best ones. And this one turned our hunting rifle into a sniping rifle. This is great because it lets us take on enemies with more precision. Now up ahead here is another runner, and like all enemies, it's built out of components, and those components control the enemy's health. So if you can pinpoint a more vulnerable component, you can maximize the amount of damage you do to it. That let Dan take it out in one shot, for instance. Now components do not only control health, they actually are also tied to enemy behavior. So an optic lens can be a component, and if you destroy it, they can't see you anymore. A hydraulic pump can control their movement, so if you take that out, they can't move. And by pinpointing these things, you can really change how a combat plays out. Now this was an easy enemy, so most components are poorly protected and low health, but some of the more advanced enemies will have their components protected by armor shield that you need to take out before you can get to the juicy bits. Here we have Saltham. It's one of the settlements in the game. It's a smaller village. And here's the bomb shelter that we've been looking for. Let's go inside and see if we can find some answers. These ones we call the ticks, and they are really creepy, nasty things. Otherwise, this place seems abandoned, but let's have a look around, see if we can find anything interesting. Here's a boombox, for instance, and that may look inconspicuous, but it's actually a piece of equipment that you can use. Looks like Sasha found the power switch and turned on the lights. Around here we've found two pieces of information. One is a document, a contact list for civil defense personnel in the village, with names and addresses. The other one is a map of the village with street names and street numbers. And looking at both of these, comparing them, putting information together, we can find out where we're going next. And they point us in the direction of an address that's very nearby, where the head of the civil defense in the village lives, or lived. Where the probably some information about what's been going on. Now, most of the buildings in the game can be entered one way or another. This is obviously useful finding loot, looking for equipment and weapons. It can also be part of a mission like this one. Or it can just be a place of refuge if you find yourself in a particularly difficult fight. Until you learn that enemies can shoot through windows.
Gesta, this is Anita. Where are you? The IPA has been going for minutes. I'm trying to get a hold of Pieter to see if the army has been in contact. But I have the evacuation plan at my house, so get here as soon as you hear this.
So this message we found, it gives us some more information. That's interesting. There's a person in the village who apparently has the evacuation plans. There's also someone who might be in contact with the army. Both of these are of interest to us, and it's an excellent opportunity for us to split up. So Sasha is going to go to this woman, Anita's house, and see if the evacuation plans are there, while Dan goes to find the army contact. Now you can play the game entirely on your own, or you can play it in seamless co-op, and you can move in between solo and co-op as you want to, and all of your progression still counts, so you don't never lose progress. You can also split up and go towards opposite ends of the world if you want to. You're not tied to each other. Up ahead is the house of the army contact that we're after. Unfortunately, there seems to be enemies about. And since we're on our own, this can get tricky again. So at a point like this, we want to look at our surroundings, see what opportunities are available to us to turn the fight around. And we see these power cabinets. If you shoot them, they actually release an electric discharge that stuns enemies for a short period. If we can lure the enemy over there, we can set a trap. Now, this is where the boombox comes in handy, because it makes noise, and enemies are attracted to noise, whether you do it or an equipment like the boombox. So let's see if Dan manages to set this trap. Much easier fight than it would have been if we just had fought in the open. And you can always look at whatever environmental objects are around you that you can use, or just the environments themselves, to turn a fight around, making it more easy. Or less hard, I should say. Most fights are pretty hard. So over here we found a scribbled note and a key. And it turns out this person was in contact with the army to provide them a key to a weapon storage outside of the village. It looks like he didn't make that meeting, but all the better for us, we can now go to that weapon storage ourselves. He also had some smoke grenades in his house, and those could also come in handy for us. So let's meet up with Sasha again, see if we, if he found out where the evacuation was taking place. It sounds like he picked a fight, so let's go and help out. Sasha found a point towards a sports field outside of the village where the evacuation was taking place. But on our way there, we'll stop by the weapon storage to stock up. And as we move around the world, we're inevitably going to run into enemies because they roam the world persistently and dynamically, looking for points of interest. So you never know when or where you're going to face them, and any position, any place in the world could be a potential battlefield. So here is, for instance, a bad battlefield because it's an open field, no cover. And using the smoke grenades, we can sort of create our own cover because this obscures the vision of the enemies and lets us control the battlefield in a better way. Hopefully, this should make it an easier fight for us.
around the smoke to keep himself out of endless vision. Now, up in the woods here is the weapon storage that we've been looking for. And this is something that we could have just come across exploring the world free roaming. Obviously, in that case, we would have found it locked and we wouldn't have had the key or know where the key was. But there are other ways for us to gain entrance to something that's locked. For instance, we can use a lockpick skill that lets us pick up the locks. Let's have a look at CO3. As you progress in the game, you will gain XP, you will level up, and you will get skill points. And you can place those skill points in this tree. It's divided in between 4 different classes and 8 different specializations. And they are tied to gameplay styles, so you can complement each other. They're soft classes, so you're not tied to anyone. You can spread your skills as you want. In this case, we're unlocking a tech skill that's called organ marking. What this lets us do is, when we scout enemies with binoculars, we will now get a lot more information about them than what we did before. This helps us to decide whether or not a fight is worth taking or if we stand a chance. And to deduct what kind of components the enemy has. Now here's the sports field. We can see that it's patrolled by enemies. These are more advanced runners than the ones we faced before, so they have armor plating, they have better weapons, and they also have some advanced components. For instance, we see that they have infrared optic lenses. That lets them see through foliage. They can see us through smoke, so our smoke grenades are no use anymore. All of this combined makes this a trickier fight, but the weapons we picked up should hopefully make it easier. Destroying their optic lenses, because if we don't destroy a component, we might be able to scavenge it. So, in this instance, we found that the infrared optic lens was actually still intact. Now we can take that and use that as an attachment on our own weapons. So our regular sniper rifle is now a heat vision sniper rifle. This will help us if we're fighting in the dark or in the woods or using smoke grenades. So it's a great boon. So let's see if there are some clues as to what happened during the evacuation.
Underhawk, the evacuation is complete. Return to base. Over. Lieutenant, we're locked Vesslin down in 10. What's your status? Over. Underhawk, Captain Dammit.
And that's the end of our demo. You don't get to see how that fight ends. Probably poorly. Generation Zero is coming out in 2019.
Is it Xbox only?
It is coming to Xbox and PC, Steam, and also to PlayStation.
I know this is based on the 80s, so are you planning to have also licensed music, or is more original produced music from?
Well, we're still looking at our options when it comes to music. Obviously, it's a self-published title. It's not a AAA budget, yeah. So we're limited. Otherwise, we would have licensed all the 80s music we could have found.
And the second question is, I know you mentioned progression, 4 players, multiplayer. Now, when what you're playing, the progression is more for the person that's hosting the match, or this is for everybody that's joining.
You all have you have your individual progression at all time, and that builds on whether you're playing with others or you're on your own and jumping in between them.
Okay.
And in terms of like missions and stuff, you still get that progression when you play with others, as long as you've had that progression on your own up to the point where you sort of continue. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
The team that made this game is not the Just Cause team, right? So,
well, depends on what you mean. Some of the people on this has worked on all of the previous Just Cause games.
So tell us a bit about the team behind this game.
Yeah, so it's a smaller team that have actually worked on, coming from all of our previous projects, worked on both AAA games and self-published titles. Some are coming straight from school, and some are super, super senior and worked in the user industry for like 15, 20 years. So it's a really mixed, but overall very senior team.
And why go the self-publishing route on this one?
This is our third self-published game. So we've previously released two hunting titles, and we felt that that has gone so well, and that gives us so much creative freedom that we really want to expand into a sort of more mainstream market.
Mm-hmm.
Really, being able to work on something where you have full creative freedom, and also full freedom of like supporting the game post launch and working with the community is just fantastic for us.
What kind of permanency is there to your actions in this game?
Depends on what you mean. I mean, certain, for instance, the most obvious example is the enemies. They are all persistently simulated. So if I fight an enemy and I shoot out parts of it or components, and then my ammo runs out or I don't have a medkit and I have to flee, that's still a sort of a small success for me because the enemy lives on, whether I'm there or not, and it will roam the world and sort of look for points of interest. And when I meet it again, it will have all the damage I gave it before from our previous fights, and I can sort of wear it down over time, or I can have my sort of nemesis that I'm after. And that's like even in between sessions, if I shut down the game and 5 weeks pass and I go back in the game, I can still track down and find an enemy that I fought before.
I guess kind of what I was getting at is that when the open world survival game just came out for Xbox in State of Decay, and you have to consider what you do with your survivors and all that sort of thing. Is there a sort of component like that, or is it more just getting on with your friends and blasting through
missions? It can definitely be just playing with your friends and blasting through missions. There's no, you have some impact to the world in terms of environment objects, but you won't, otherwise, apart from the story, there's no sort of persistent mission systems or persistent like world building or building houses or constructing bases or anything like that.
Crossplay?
Not planned, no.
Okay.
So, with enemies being persistent, how do you control difficulty? Does that scale with your character's level?
No, there's no difficulty scaling at all. All difficulty is based on geography. So, certain parts of the world will be much more difficult. And it will obviously have the better stuff for you to find. But also, whether you're playing on your own or playing with friends, like if you band together with a really great group with a sort of different specialities, good weapons, you can take on much more difficult places in the world earlier than you would have been able to if you play on your own.
You said that you self-published two hunting games, did I hear that correctly?
Yep.
Did you bring over a lot of the shooting mechanics from that?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it was kind of born from us working on the latest one, it's called Call of the Wild, and seeing the potential of sort of bringing those mechanics into a different setting. So what if you have an enemy type that when it sees you, it doesn't run away from you, it actually runs at you. So the advanced stealth mechanics really makes it a completely different game. And it's there's a lot of things that we found. It ties well into the type of guerrilla action game that we wanted to create. So it's built a lot on the foundation we laid with that game.
Why the 80s Sweden?
That's actually partially also because of that. So I worked on that hunting game, and one of the reserves in that game is it's a German reserve, but it looks just like the place where I grew up. Like, and I had this throwback to playing war games in the forests of rural Sweden with my brothers in the late 80s. felt like I wanted to take that into a game experience. And to that came a lot of other things, and it kind of fit together, and we came up with a story about Sweden in the Cold War. That's really an untold, interesting thing that we were really inspired by. We also knew from the start that this is a world that we know by heart, like this setting, which lets us really create it with a lot of authenticity. So even if you are not did not grow up in Sweden in the 80s like we did, you should, that authenticity should still come across, and you should feel like the world is a very real place.
One last question, I think. You're all good?
Location of Sweden? Is this like south, north?
I don't know. You'll have to go to Sweden to find out.
I've only been to Stockholm, so I don't know.
It's we've tried to actually create a map that brings on a lot of the variety of Swedish culture. As much as we can.
So, have you released any visuals of the boombox in first person? Because I like that visual, and I would like to show that to my readers.
No.
The boombox in first person.
Yeah.
I will talk to the team tomorrow when they're back in campus, because they're very different time zones.
Sure.
And see if they could capture a screenshot that we are happy with. I can promise anything. What you can do, this is, I ran out of business cards, but you can take Emil's card and you can email him. He will forward that to me and we can start a conversation.
Okay.
What was your name?
Steven from Kotaku.
Yeah, I'm Anna.
Nice to meet you. Cool. Okay, yeah, I'll shoot.
Yep.
Email.
Okay. I'm email. So if you have any other questions, shoot them my way as well.
You'll remember that I'm the guy that asked for the boombox.
Yes. Steven, what's the boombox?
Who does it?
Yes.
What time is it?
It's actually time for you to run.
Yeah. I have my previous engagement.
Right. I like Steven with the boombox. That's going to be your new handle, I think.
All right, but thanks a lot.
Thanks for
Thank you so much.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.